Beacon Press Audio presents All Made Up, The Power and Pitfalls of Beauty Culture, From Cleopatra to Kim Kardashian, by Ray Knudsen. This audiobook is narrated by Ann Richardson, published by Beacon Press Audio, 2021. Introduction. Why we need to talk about makeup. There is no way to opt out of the influence makeup has on our lives. There is no way to decide that appearance and the cosmetics used to create it don't matter, because the choice about how to present ourselves is never made in a vacuum. Beauty trends change over time, reflecting a culture's shifting tastes and priorities, and that, in turn, affects what people wear and how they are perceived. Tressie McMillan Cottom writes that beauty isn't what you look like, it's the preferences that reproduce the social order. Appearance matters because as soon as someone steps into view, they send visual signals that could trigger unconscious judgments. People may not be aware of what they are presenting to others, but those signals may affect people's lives in big and small ways every day. No one can skip participating in appearance politics. It matters whether someone believes it does or not, whether someone thinks about it or not, whether someone wants it to or not. No one can stop themselves from being seen. People face the question of what to wear and where to wear it every day. Intuitively, many people know to wear something different to a party with friends than to an office job. This seemingly built-in understanding of socially appropriate self-presentation in ever-shifting contexts likely comes from years of conscious or unconscious data gathering. People see what others are wearing and often try to emulate the generally accepted style. Makeup is a simultaneous reflection of our understanding of the world around us and a presentation of sense of self within that world. In a video tutorial from Rihanna's makeup company, Fenty, from December 2019, actor Amandla Stenberg demonstrates a makeup look inspired by New Year's Eve. She says she wants the look to be celebratory and all about the glitz and the glam. She uses a blend of blue eyeshadows to create a cat-eye shape that extends beyond her eyelid. The lighter, brighter blues are toward the inside corner of her eye, and the darker blues toward the outside. Her dark blue eyeliner comes to a sharp point, extending the length of her eyelids. Her lipstick is a cool, purpley brown, topped with a clear, iridescent lip gloss. Her makeup is colorful and bold, and she sets it with powder so she won't sweat it off while dancing. New Year's Eve can be an excuse to wear glitter and bright colors. Parties waiting for midnight may call for glamour that would look out of place in daytime hours. In a different video for Vogue from June 2020, actor Lucy Hale shares her everyday routine for skincare and makeup. In her video, she says that this makeup look is one she'd use for work meetings. She blends a variety of pink eyeshadows over her eyelid, and when she applies a shimmery pink cream shadow to her lower lash line, she warns the viewer about going overboard with the product by saying, "This is still day. We don't want to look like we're going to the club." Hale implies that makeup worn for a night out at a club or party is more about excess and bold colors and shapes, while makeup for a daytime work meeting is less colorful, uses less product, and is less obvious. Hale actually uses 18 products for her makeup look, while Stenberg uses only 12. But Hale's colors are more muted, light pinks to Stenberg's bold blues. Hale's eyeliner rims her eyes and doesn't go outside the lash line, while Stenberg's eyeliner extends past her natural eye shape. Hale's makeup look is not quite natural, but its colors and shapes blend with her skin tone and features. But as Hale notes, what could take her look from meeting appropriate to club ready could be just a bit more product than she used in the demonstration. For example, a winged eyeliner may work for the office, but if that wing extends too long, it becomes a cat eye that's not welcome at most office jobs. What differentiates makeup for work versus makeup for a party is the appearance of excess, not actual excess. Hale's daytime look uses more products and has more steps than Stenberg's New Year's Eve look, but Stenberg's makeup is bolder. Understanding the difference can be easy in theory, but difficult to navigate in actuality. The lines between day makeup and nighttime party makeup are blurry, and not just because they are expertly blended, like Stenberg's eyeshadow. Often, when socially acceptable clothing and makeup are required, they cost money and knowledge that the dominant culture hoards. A proper appearance is also often based on upholding whiteness and maleness as the de facto way to be. Appropriate versus inappropriate is a line that can shift at any point depending on who is setting the boundaries and who is crossing them. Differences in informal dress codes for various events can also be subliminal and hard to elucidate. Generally, attitudes about what makeup looks are acceptable in certain settings reveal more about society's prejudices than about makeup itself or the individuals who choose to wear it. Makeup becomes a litmus test for how people feel about race, gender, sexuality, femininity and masculinity, and more. Even when many rights and social customs are taken away, makeup remains a touchstone for bodily autonomy, self-worth, and people's and society's priorities. In prison, women often have limited or no access to makeup, but some inmates still find ways to create it from what they do have available. U.S. commissaries in federal facilities in the 2010s may have offered limited products, such as lip gloss or concealer, while state and county facilities were likely to offer even fewer options, mostly mascara and eyeliner. So women used things like melted Jolly Rancher candies mixed with body lotion, ground-up colored pencils mixed with baby powder, and coffee mixed with face cream to create hair gel, eyeshadow, and foundation, respectively. This creativity in making oneself up in prison isn't limited to a single time or place. In 1977, Linda Maxwell, an inmate of Bedford Hills Correctional Facility for Women in New York, recalled how she used toothpaste mixed with ink on magazine pages to make eyeshadow and black shoe polish for mascara. In Milan in 1908, an imprisoned woman made contraband rouge by soaking the red thread of her prison uniform in water and using it to paint blush onto her cheeks. Women in the prison also licked the whitewashed walls of their cells and chewed the lime fragments to create a white paste they used on their faces. A newspaper article about the incident at the time marveled that these women would be eager to be fashionable, even though they never saw any men. In all other respects, most of the prisoners are devoid of every trait which ennobles and beautifies the lives of women, said the story, headlined, Vanity Too Laughs at Locksmiths. The writing implied that women only cared about beauty to gain attention from men, and that wearing cosmetics in prison was an act of vanity and coquetry. But in prison, wearing makeup wasn't for men's benefit. Instead, these women wanted to look and feel beautiful for themselves, and to establish some normalcy and a sense of self-worth. For them, beauty wasn't frivolous or vain, it was survival. Women are often socialized to protect and encourage their beauty, but in prison the tools to do so are denied. Society teaches women they have to be beautiful to be worth anything, and then, once they're in prison, we mock, demoralize, and punish them for trying to keep that standard, wrote Marlene Komar for Racked in 2018. Makeup is one of the things prison takes away.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?